Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, recorded live on blogtalkradio.com on January 25, 2008. Anna Gunn's arrival in the city of Deadwood on the HBO series, the same name. There we go. Let's start that over again. Anna Gunn's arrival in the city of Deadwood on the HBO series of the same name set off one of the craziest love triangles in history. The widow of Sheriff Bullock's brother changed that crazy, foul-mouthed Wild West town forever. Now, it's early in the run of the new, critically acclaimed AMC series, Breaking Bad, but I suspect that as Bryan Cranston's wife, Skyler, the lovely Anna Gunn will be anything but shy and retiring. Anna, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thanks for taking the time. We are delighted to have you. You have done a lot of TV in your career, but these last two series, Deadwood and now Breaking Bad, must have really changed your career trajectory.
Absolutely. Yeah, they absolutely have. I feel like it's been an amazing ride into a new place for me, and it's been something I've dreamed of. You know, I've dreamed of working with David Milch for a long time on a series, ever since doing a little role for him on NYPD Blue. And we got the opportunity about 9 years later, so that was an amazing surprise. And then it was a wild ride through the Wild West, and I loved it. I had a great time on that. And then this came along. I had a baby in between, and again, it was just such a marvelous, delicious surprise when I read the script. I just immediately said yes. I loved it and went in and was fortunate enough to get the role. And I think Vince Gilligan is brilliant. He's a brilliant writer, and I love the entire cast, and we've been having a really good time.
I want to give listeners a chance to call in and ask you a question themselves if they like. Let me give that number. It is 646-595-3135. 646-595-3135. What was your first? I mean, Deadwood is a crazy concept, but Breaking Bad, it's even strange to just say the title of this show.
Yeah.
What was your first, reaction when you got the gist of what this was about?
Well, I was just sent the script, and I don't think anybody told me what the story of the script was, and I just read it, and I thought, as it unfolded and I turned each page, I got more and more enthralled and excited about it, because it's rare to see an everyday man with the struggles that he's dealing with, and then you put him in this position where he's essentially got to make some choices, and he makes a choice that changes his entire life, that will change the lives of his family, and it's a morality play, I think, in a lot of ways. I think it's a wonderful way for people to look into themselves and think, what would I do if I were in this position? What would I do? And he makes a very impulsive choice, but it's a very strong choice. And one that, he jumps into it. And I think the most telling thing in the pilot is that he's questioned by his cohort as to why he's doing this. And he just looks at him and says, "I'm alive." I'm awake, or I'm alive. Now I can't remember.
I'm awake, yeah.
Yeah,
we should probably take a minute. You and I know what we're talking about. there may be people listening who have maybe seen the full-page ads in the newspapers with Bryan Cranston, your co-star, and I'll point out he was the dad in Malcolm in the Middle, standing in his underwear, brandishing a gun out in, I guess, in New Mexico?
In Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And the show, he plays a guy who's just not doing very well with life. Life is not treating him well. He's a science teacher, and he's working part-time in a car wash, and then he finds out he's got terminal cancer.
Right.
Have I summed that up?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now, what's the big twist and that really pushes this series forward?
Well, he also has a son with cerebral palsy, and he has a wife who's expecting their second child. And he's desperately trying to make ends meet, and he's told that he has at most a couple of years to live, and he wants to leave his family. He doesn't want to leave them without anything. And by chance, his brother-in-law leads him into the world of crystal meth on a ride-along, because his brother-in-law is a DEA agent. And he sees how much the piles of money, first of all, on TV. Then he's taken on a ride-along, and he happens to see one of his ex-students who's involved with this whole thing, and the light bulb goes on in his head, and he makes his decision. That's where he's going to go. He's a chemistry teacher. He's a chemist. And for him, it's chemistry. Mm. It is chemistry.
There's never that moment, that moral moment, where he thinks, gee, this stuff would be bad for people. It's just, I got a wife, I have a teen, I have a baby on the way. I haven't been a very good provider to this point, but that's going to change now.
I believe so. And, as to what is going on internally for him in terms of morality, that's the deepest question that's going to be, I think, explored on the series. And in terms of everybody around him, in terms of the whole cast, I think everybody's going to explore their own moral issues with it and with this kind of decision.
Mm. Now, I watched on one of the HD channels, they had a little behind the scenes on the show, and there was a lot of joking about Bryan Cranston in his tidy whities.
That's right.
I'm sure you want to say that the show is about more than him standing around in those in his underwear.
Well, that's a large part of the show up to this point, but yes, there is more to the show than that. But that is an essential part. I have never seen such delight in a man running around in his underwear, and we all applaud his. We all applaud his strength and courage. No, I'm kidding. Brian's willing to go wherever he needs to go for the role, and that's the right thing to do. So, he embraced it fully.
maybe a little too fully for his
cast. Hey, it's all right. We should all be running around in our underwear by the end of the
show. How long, and you know, and I don't expect you to actually answer this directly, but how long can he keep his secret of the terminal cancer?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, how long can he keep his underwear?
No, I'm not asking that. No.
how long can he keep a secret of his cancer?
Yeah.
Well, that's to be explored in upcoming episodes, and I don't want to ruin anything for viewers, so I think I'll let people discover that, but... that's one of the great questions. How can he? What is he going to do with that secret, and what is he going to do with his other secret? And those are things to be seen as the episodes unfold. And it's really exciting, actually, how those things reveal themselves.
One of our and listeners who don't know this, there's a web chat that goes on simultaneous with the live interview, and we have a question from the web chat. Mimi's asking, because your character Skylar is pregnant.
Yeah.
Time-wise, how do you feel that the pregnancy should play out? There's about 8 episodes shot for this first season.
Yeah, and they are the first season takes place over a relatively short period of time. So they're she's progressing in her pregnancy, but it's a slow progression because you know, in terms of the time, I'm not sure how everything's going to play out, but it's not, I don't think we're going to go by leaps and bounds because we have, you know, he has a finite amount of time with his illness. And in terms of the pregnancy, I think we start out around month 5 and we slowly progress through that in the first season.
Mm. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you've had a baby, so maybe it's not so bad to be wearing the baby suit.
Yeah. Well, I've had 2 children, and when I shot the pilot, I guess I'd had my baby 5 months before, actually. So it was all fresh in my mind, and it was I went, oh yeah, okay, we bring this back, and you know, going through that is just something that is, when it's that fresh in your mind, it's pretty easy to recall all the things that go along with it. We just incorporated that into the costumes and into the whole story. So it's fun. It's fun to play that because it's an incredibly exciting time in somebody's life when they're pregnant. So I love exploring that.
Has Gilligan tipped you off to why the character is pregnant? I mean, isn't the family, the husband, the wife, and the teen son with CP, isn't that enough?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, I think that in our exploration of it, we thought, you know, most likely this was a surprise. This is one of those surprises that takes you in life, and you know, it's unexpected, but it's really embraced and celebrated. And I think, you know, every pregnancy, everything brings along a certain amount of nervousness, and it's equal parts nervousness, excitement, the unknown, but it's all, you know, I think every person who has a child has that journey to take, so, yeah.
Let me give out the phone number one more time for anyone who might be joining us now. It's 646-595-3135. Of course, regular Mr. Media listeners know I have no trouble keeping conversation going, so I'm not relying on them. One of the similarities I sort of see between your roles in Breaking Bad and Deadwood is that on the surface, neither one of them is really a big role, so you have to make the most of every moment of screen time. Is that is that true?
That is true. It is. It's a really challenging thing because when you have just moments to reveal who you are, you need to look deeply into every scene, into every conversation that you're having, and figure out what it is that is being revealed about your character. And in Deadwood, it was certainly that. I mean, there were just so many. It was a huge population that they were filming, and it was a really large cast, and so we had. When we did have moments and scenes, you did really have to figure out how to mine those experiences. And on Breaking Bad, it's the wonderful thing about both of these writers is that they understand in subtle ways, and even with the most seemingly minute or everyday kind of scenarios, there is something being revealed about the relationships, about the people, and about where they are in their life, just by the way they respond, by the looks they give, you know, all of that. And it's really explored by the directors as well. So it's a wonderful, it's a challenging thing, definitely, but it's a great thing to take that on.
There were three, I'm thinking of three scenes in the pilot where you have that kind of impact. The first is there's the surprise party for Brian's character, Walter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and you just kind of say in his ear, you're very late.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we were wondering about that. And my wife and I watched it, and I think we were both wondering the same thing. Does she know that he works at the car wash?
Yes, it's It's right at the beginning of the pilot when they're sitting down to have breakfast. She says something about Bogdan keeping. Bogdan's the guy who runs the car wash. And she says, I don't want him keeping you late today. You know, he's supposed to let you out at a certain time, so get out at a certain time. And that's her way of trying to make him on time for the party without letting him know. But, yes, she does know. She knows that he's working the second job.
Okay.
And so she's informed of that.
I missed that on the first play. I'm sure when we go back and see it again, which I'm sure we will, I'll pick up on that and other things. And then the second one is you're in the clothing store with your son on the show, and there's some bullies at the other end of the store who are making fun of him and his condition, and you know, you're handling it as the mom and you're being protective and you want to do something because you don't think that your husband is going to take care of this.
Right.
So you have that moment there, and then moments later, Brian, as the dad, comes bursting into the front of the store and deals with this. And that's another moment, it seems like, that you have that opportunity to really act, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think all moments are an opportunity to act and to explore something about the character. But absolutely, in that moment, I think the wonderful dynamic going on is that you see, first of all, you see the way that we as parents deal with our son, and that, you know, we try to allow him as much independence and freedom and, you know, let him get on with his life in the best way he can. And then at a certain time, you have to step in as a parent. And it's trying to figure out, you're always trying to figure that out as a parent, how to maneuver your way through that. And she's trying to keep her cool. She's trying to keep a lid on it. But, you know, when it comes to your child, nobody's going to mess with that. And as a parent, you're going to do something. And she's ready to walk over there and, you know, kick some butt. but she's interrupted. I mean, you know, you see her starting to cross the store and going over to them, and you wonder, ooh, what's going to go on? And she's not scared of them. There's a whole, you know, group of them. She's not scared. And it's the way I think any parent will react if their child were in that situation. And it's a complete and utter surprise to her that all of a sudden Walt comes in and does what he does. It's she's never, ever seen that side of him come out. Never.
Well, and that leads us to the third instance that I'm thinking of, which is at the very end. He's just lived this life that you still know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
He's been out cooking up crystal meth in the desert, and he's had a whole thing with guns and all this kind of stuff. And he comes to bed, and you're both like staring up at the ceiling. You say something, and he just kind of looks at you, and then, you know, you two start having sex, I assume. And it reminded me of some of those moments actually back to Deadwood, because the relationship between the Bullock, the sheriff,
mm-hmm.
and his unplanned new wife it's very tentative and very awkward when we start to see them being physical, and it's like, who is this person?
Right.
Where did you come from?
Right. And I love that. I mean, both those situations with Deadwood, certainly with that situation, you know, she was married to his Sheriff Bullock's brother, and they are really strangers to each other. So when she comes into town and they address each other as Mr. Bullock and Mrs. Bullock, they're doing that first of all because of the time that was, and that actually wasn't an uncommon thing for married couples to call themselves by, you know, that formal of a title. But especially in their case, that's all they knew to say to each other. They didn't know each other, and then they have to set up house together. And they're both doing the best they can, and they're living also with the ghost. They're living with the ghost of the brother between them, but they're tentatively, slowly making their way toward each other. And you know, my disappointment with that was that you never get to fully see where they could go, where they could end up, because I think there are two people on their way to really falling in love in a marriage, which is a wonderful thing to explore. But with Breaking Bad, these are two people, I believe, that deeply love each other, that always have, but have gotten into routine and habit and various things along the way that people get into, and then suddenly there are shades of a person in terms of Skylar watching Walt. She's seeing shades of him that she's never seen before, and she's confused. She doesn't know where it's coming from. Is he? What is he out doing? Why has his behavior changed so much? And of course, probably one of the first things that somebody goes to is he having an affair? What is he doing? And all of a sudden, you know, he turns to her with such passion and such vigor, and it's something that she hasn't. I think probably in the early days they experienced, you know, a modicum of that. Maybe not a modicum, maybe a lot of it, but they haven't experienced it in a long time, and she is completely taken by surprise and delight.
Yeah, you could see, and I think you get the last word in that pilot episode.
Yes. Walt, is that you? That's right. And she means that in every sense of the word.
And of course, Walt, is that you? Because of course, earlier in the day, it was the pool boy.
That's right.
No.
My God, who is that? Oh, it's you. That's right. I thought it was the gardener.
There were a couple ways to.
That's right. But I think that's the wonderful, and that's also wonderful when you get to see a married couple and a pregnant woman especially, and I just love this about the way they're writing the character is, you know, sometimes on TV and you don't see pregnant women being portrayed as sexual women, as women who, you know, are women, and they do portray her that way, and I love that because it gets real, because it's just honest and real.
Of course, there are married men and women who are going through having a child or wife is pregnant, and they don't know quite how to handle the woman's sexuality while she's pregnant. So, yeah, I could see it could be an awkward thing on TV as well, where things are not always as they might be.
Right.
I want to ask you, a year ago, having a series on AMC would not have been a likely path to success. But I'm guessing that Mad Men, which won the Golden Globe for Best Drama, changed that perception. I'm just kind of wondering, at what point did you get involved with this relative to Mad Men coming on the air?
Well, at the time I got involved, I knew that they had another show that they were, I believe Mad Men was, must have been shooting already, but that's all I knew. I knew a little bit about what the storyline was, and I had a few people that I knew working on it, but that's about all I knew. And so I was excited because of AMC making its foray into the dramatic series world, and they are tremendously brave. They're risk-taking with both of these shows. They're completely different stories. They're completely different periods, and they give them they've given them such a broad range to reach out, and they've given them a real opportunity to explore the true core of these stories. And I think it's really exciting to be a part of that. To be in it at the beginning when they're making this this inroad into that world, and obviously they're doing it right, and they're doing a brilliant job, because both of these shows are exploring territory that I think is exciting on television. I think it's providing a whole new world for viewers, and I think it's really, and I'm excited to see what they come up with next as well.
Well, it's interesting that their first show really stars people that we really don't know. I mean, the actors were, with the exception of the fellow who's on Desperate Housewives, or was, I guess he's passed away on that show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really unknown actors for the most part. So it wasn't a lot of risk there. But you and Brian in particular, I mean, coming in on AMC's second show, not knowing at the time you're filming that how that first one's going to turn out, a little bit of risk on your part. I mean,
Yeah, there was, and but I think when you, as an actor, read material that is as good as this is, it's a rare thing, first of all, and secondly, it's what you look for as an actor. And when you're presented with the opportunity to dive into material that's as wonderful as this is, it seems foolish to turn your back on it. It doesn't come along that often. And I saw, and even though Skylar, you know, is not necessarily there for a great amount of the pilot, I saw enough, and I talked with Vince enough that I knew that this was a story that I wanted to be involved in. And so absolutely, when you're going into something and it's brand new, you think, oh, how is this going to work out, and are people going to tune in and all that? It was proved that they did tune in great numbers, and that was exciting.
Now, I want to spend a little time talking about Deadwood. You've kind of come back and forth to it. I know in our house we love that show.
Yeah.
You joined it, I think, in its second season?
That's right.
Was it a culture shock to walk onto that set? I mean, I'm sure people are very normal, you know, when you're not filming, but the colorful language, I'll put that nicely. it's a little different than when you're on, I don't know, The Practice or even NYPD Blue was not this blue.
It was not this blue. No, it was no, it wasn't. And for me, it was just again. I watched every episode of the first season, and I thought, oh my god, I loved it. I just fell in love with it, and I loved the freedom of the language. And people have talked a lot about the language on Deadwood, and you know, what was that really the way they talked, and how comments, you know, it was so. And according to David, and he knows, absolutely, that's the way people talked in that world. I mean, Mrs. Bullock didn't talk that way, because I wouldn't have, because that the kind of character I was playing wouldn't have spoken that way. She was a true Victorian lady, but the majority of people in that town absolutely talked as blue as that, so to speak. And you know, I always wished that sometimes I thought, oh, I wish Mrs. Bullock would loosen up and get into some of that, but you know, that wasn't who she was, so it was absolutely right that she didn't. But I just thought it was exciting. I thought, you know, walking the first day I shot, we actually shot me coming in on the stagecoach into town, and it was perfect. You know, it just happened to work out that way. And I rode in on the stagecoach, and we came around the corner and drove down Main Street, and there was the town fully alive with these amazing extras tipping their hats at me and saying, ma'am, good morning. And I just, I was enthralled, because I thought, oh, I'm, you know, when you're riding along, you wonder how much you're going to have to create in terms of your reaction to this new place. And it was all there laid out in front of me. And I couldn't believe it. It was like I was in a, you know, an amusement park for an actor.
Now, I mentioned earlier about the triangle that developed between you and, I guess, Molly Parker's character of Alma Garrett and
right.
Timothy Oliphant's sheriff. Did you or David Milch know where that was going when you joined the show?
We knew a little bit. I'm sure David knew more, as a creator should always know more than the actors, and they share what they will with you. But I knew to a certain degree, and especially since watching the first season, that he and Alma had fallen in love. And but you don't know what kind of love it is. There are various shades and degrees of that, and so you don't know, was it lust? Was it really deep love? You don't know what you're fully doing with that. And then as the second and third season unfolded, as you say, the triangle that was set up just got more and more interesting, because nobody was trying to intentionally mess up anybody else's life. Mrs. Bullock didn't come to town in order to take somebody else's man. She just, you know, she was in survival mode. She had a son, and she needed to be provided for, and he stepped up and said, I'll marry you, and she said, okay, great. And even though she didn't know this person, you know, you have to do what you have to do to survive and to live, and she needed a father for her son mainly. That was the main thing driving her. She wanted a father for her son. She knew he was a good man, and she knew he'd be a good father. Mm-hmm. And as for the kind of man he'd be as a husband, that was a complete mystery. And, mm-hmm. you know, there were a lot of things to deal with. And she knew almost immediately, as you saw in that first episode, as soon as she saw Alma Garrett and she saw them looking at each other, she knew. She knew.
Yeah.
And the way she chose to deal with that, and the way that that Tim, who played Sheriff Bullock, dealt with it, was just so fascinating, because they didn't they don't have a language to even speak to each other, much less speak to each other about that. So, and she very quietly and methodically found her way into his life and into that town as she became the teacher for the kids of the town. There was no schoolhouse before that. So she very quietly but purposefully and strongly made herself a part of that community, and also just refused to be daunted by the situation she was handed, in terms of she comes to town married to a stranger and he's having an affair, or she knows something's gone on between him and this other woman. And then you know, she starts to it starts to be revealed, more starts to be revealed to her about this isn't just a woman who is some hussy. This is a person, you know, in a situation of her own, and that's what made it so interesting. Again, it's dealing with issues of morality, mm-hmm. and how people wrestle with that, and how it may seem black and white at the beginning, and then shades of gray are introduced, and that's what's fascinating about these stories.
Now, it's a show, Deadwood, that people were absolutely repulsed and fascinated by.
Yeah.
And because of the language or any other issue, was it a hard show to work on?
In terms of what, the language, or in terms of?
Well, just the. I keep thinking that. I keep coming back to the language, because that's very apparent. A lot of sexual situations. It was just a very strong mannered show. I mean, I just wondered if it was tough to be on that set every day for any reason.
Well, you know, I think that because I wasn't there all the time, it would have been a different experience possibly if I had been there. But every day I was there was exciting to me, because, again, you know, I didn't have it wasn't ever necessarily a huge role. There were a few episodes where, you know, where I was working more, but every day that I came in, it was just it was an exciting time, and I just sort of embraced every day that I was there. Difficulty sometimes in, yes, it was not just the language in terms of it being coarse language, because I didn't have to deal with that. It was beautiful, poetic language, and quite frankly, even the coarse language was detailed and written in such a way. And I think, am I allowed to swear?
Absolutely.
Okay. You never know. but I think Ian McShane said, if you put one fuck in the wrong place, you're fucked. Something like that. I'm probably misquoting again, as I misquoted, you know, I said how brilliant Vince was, and then I misquoted him immediately by saying Brian's line was, I am alive, instead of I'm awake. But anyway, you know, it's true that with any of the language that David wrote, I think he's a poet, and it's like Shakespeare. There's a rhythm to it. There is a flow to it, and there's a purpose to it, and it's very important to get every word right and to get it in its right place. And sometimes we would get the material late, and sometimes he'd change things because he would just see something in the rehearsal and go, oh, you know what, that doesn't work, let's put this in instead. So you sometimes would have to learn things rather quickly. That was nerve-wracking sometimes. It was scary sometimes, absolutely. But again, I'm excited by things like that, because I see them as challenges, and I see them as opportunities to embrace that kind of fear and go, ooh, I don't know quite what I'm doing. I'm skating on thin ice, but I'm just going to go. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, was sometimes challenging. Also, I have to say, and this sounds like such a little thing, but we were in the true period costumes of the time, and we were out shooting at Melody Ranch, which is basically high desert here in California. And in the summertime when we started, it was blazing hot. It was unbelievably hot. And there were a few days in the beginning when I first started that it was something like 105, 107 degrees, and we weren't getting air conditioning in the buildings, and you're wearing, you know, three, four layers, five layers of wool and petticoats and corsets. And we were thinking, we're in our own personal saunas. Oh, my God. And so you had to just deal with the elements more, for me, more than anything I've ever shot. You were dealing with the elements, but it just seemed right because, you know, you would be dealing with the elements, and that's what they were dealing with. So you take all that on and incorporate it, I think. And you know, of course, with anything, well, again, you brought this up before, that in terms of playing Mrs. Bullock, playing Martha, the challenging part for me was sometimes feeling like there were only maybe one or two scenes sometimes in an episode where I had an opportunity, where I was appearing. So you have to really make the most of that time without making it a huge deal, because not every scene is a big, you know, trumpet playing fanfare sort of scene. And you just have to, you have to find your moments. You have to find ways to reveal things that are really essential to the character. And when you don't have a lot of time to do that, that's a real challenge as an actor.
Well, I'd love to go on another hour with you about Deadwood and Breaking Bad. I wonder if we can just steal you for just a couple more minutes.
Sure.
I'm kind of guessing that you don't surf.
No, I do not, as of yet.
Where's he going with that one? An awful lot of actors from Deadwood wound up on David Milch's next series, Jonathan
right.
Cincinnati.
Right.
And I wondered if you had that opportunity or... You know,
no, I didn't. I don't know that there was necessarily anything in there for me. What's wonderful about David is that he, when he works with actors that he connects with, that he, for whatever reason, that he likes, he remembers them. And like I said, you know, he remembered me from, at that time, from sort of 9 years ago, from a role I had done, a guest starring role on NYPD Blue. And I'd also been on Murder One, and I'd seen him throughout the years a few times at auditions, and then I came in for Martha, and it was pretty clear that it was a good fit, and he knows that intuitively and instinctively, and when he knows that an actor is right for something, it really he's pretty genius, I think, at casting. He really gets the internal workings of a person and knows how to make them work within a character. So I think that that's what he did with people from Deadwood and people that he knows. And he's comfortable working with people that he knows. He has you already have a language and a way of working that's established, and it makes it a lot easier. You have a shorthand.
Deadwood ended rather abruptly. I remember seeing a quote from Tim Oliphant where he had said, yeah, it's a little bit of a problem because I think this was him. I think he said, I just bought a house, and then David called and said, we're not going to continue the show. Were you also surprised by the way it ended? And do you see any hope that there'll be those, there was some talk for a while, of a couple of, you know, 2 hour movies to kind of wrap it up. Do you see any hope of that happening?
Well, I keep hoping for that because I think that would be so wonderful, and I know that so many people who loved the show and watched the show were so sorely disappointed that they didn't get to see what happens with these people and with this town. So I keep hoping, although a lot of time has gone by now, that'll still happen, because I think that would be a wonderful thing. I don't know logistically how it's possible, but I suppose anything's possible, really. And yes, I would love to see that go on. And it was abrupt, and it was a bit shocking for everybody. I think we all really wanted to explore the next step of these characters, because they're such interesting characters, and you get attached to them, you get attached to where they're going, and then all of a sudden, you have to put the brakes on.
We kind of wondered. We watched John from Cincinnati. Fairly loyally, and kind of wondered if one of the reasons that so many characters from Deadwood wound up there had something to do with Milt's feeling guilty for pulling the rug out from everyone's income.
Oh, yes. I'd like to say no comment. No, I mean, you know, I can't, well, I actually, I really can't, I don't know about the internal workings of what happens in terms of that, but absolutely, when you're an actor and you are, you're going from episode to episode, and you're supporting yourself that way, and you're counting on something to continue, and then all of a sudden it doesn't. Yeah, it's shocking, and it's a little difficult, but that's the nature of the game. So you learn to roll with those kind of things too.
Well, let's wrap up with a question about Breaking Bad. You've obviously completed filming the first season. Do we know yet, now that the first one is aired, how, you know, have you heard anything from AMC, or your agent, anyone down the line about what the future there might be?
I have not heard anything yet. The wonderful thing that I have heard is that the show premiered very, very strongly. We had a lot of viewers. The critical response has been extremely, extremely positive. And, just from people that I know who've watched it and even people I don't know, they've been really, really positive about it. So I'm very hopeful and feel very strongly that, you know, we'll go on with the second season, and I hope that happens.
Hmm. Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, too, and I enjoyed it as well. Thank you.
Good luck on the show.
Thanks so much.
Right. For many more celebrity and media newsmaker interviews, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com, where you can listen to my conversations with Billy Bob Thornton, Cheryl Hines, Milo Ventimiglia, David Fury, Stefan Pastis, and many, many others. Or you can read full transcriptions of those interviews. And please come back again next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.